This is Jim Inkster. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. And coming today on the show, we'll visit with State Senator Sharon Weston Broome, Democrat from Baton Rouge. She'll talk about the upcoming legislative session, the governor's tax proposals, and the senator is holding some town hall meetings to get input from constituents. We'll visit with Senator Sharon Weston Broome. Also on the show today, Marilyn Yalom. Her book is How the French Invented Love, appropriate for Valentine's Day. And Leo Lowndes, a motivational speaker who has come forward with her latest work, her ninth book, How to Create Chemistry with Anyone. 75 ways to spark it fast and make it last. All this, now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it is 877-217-5757. You may reach us via email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Our guest to begin is Senator Sharon Weston Broome, Democrat, District 15, Baton Rouge, the President Pro Tem of the Louisiana Senate, formerly the Speaker Pro Tem of the Louisiana House. She has served in the state legislature now for some time, in her third term in the Senate, and served three terms in the House. So that's, what, right around 22 years, and then spent, prior to that, 3 years in the chair at the Metro Council. So she has had a life of public service. Good morning to you, Senator Broome.
Good morning, Jim. It's good to be here.
And happy Valentine's Day.
And same to you.
Yeah, you and the handsome Marvin Broome. How many years married now?
It will be 14 in March. Mm-hmm. Time flies when you're having fun.
Well, huh? And I'm sure Marvin has taken care of business. I see the average man spends $175.61 every Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I don't know if that's in our budget.
And the average woman spends $88.78.
That might be in the budget.
Okay, all right. And there are 180 million cards out there.
Yeah. So that's always in the budget.
Okay, our cards are good.
Yeah.
But we're glad you're with us on Valentine's Day, and this is a time of interest in our state, as it always is, but it looks like 2013 shaping up as a pretty eventful year at the Capitol.
Yeah, it is, Jim. You know, we will be dealing with a fiscal session, and already we've heard a little bit. We've got a sneak preview, if you will, of what we can expect in terms of discussions surrounding taxes in Louisiana. There is not a formal piece of legislation, if you will, or bill at this time. But, of course, the administration has been talking about strong tax reform as it relates to the citizens of Louisiana. And I've been getting feedback on both ends of the spectrum. And so we'll wait to see how the legislation shapes up, and then we'll take it from there.
When you say a sneak preview, it really was a sneak preview, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Were you in on that meeting?
Well, let me just say this. I don't know about that meeting, but I think the governor and his team are certainly trying to lay a foundation and enlarge communication, you know, enhance communication in terms of sharing what they're considering and getting feedback from legislators. So I think that's I don't have any problem with that, you know.
Well, I did get word just before the show that Tim Barfield, who runs the Department of Revenue, has agreed, he says, to be on the show one day next week. So we will hear from him. But it looks like there is about a dollar increase in the cigarette tax.
Yes.
And about a 2 cent increase in the sales tax, offset by perhaps totally eliminating income taxes. Is that doable?
Well, you know, it's supposed to be revenue neutral. Now, that term concerns me because why are we raising sales taxes if the whole formula is going to be revenue neutral? So, you know, I didn't major in math, but some of that doesn't quite add up for me. And I have to tell you that while many people have shared with me they're good with having getting rid of the state income tax, a number of individuals have certainly all over the spectrum have shared their concern about raising sales taxes. I mean, that'll make us probably one of the top in the nation in terms of a state with sales taxes that high. So I think we have to really consider it, because certainly sales tax has always been defined as being regressive, and rightfully so. And while certainly lower income individuals will be impacted, middle class will be impacted, and others as well, because we are all consumers at some point, and we'll have to pay the price.
297-5633 for Senator Sharon Weston Broome. She is the Senate President Pro Tem in the Louisiana Senate in her third term. And we will talk with her about her future endeavors. She's term limited, and so this will be her last term, but there's still 3 years to go in this term, and there's much work that needs to be done and will be done. And she will be visiting with constituents. Town hall meetings, how many do you have scheduled?
Wow, I have at least four scheduled, and we're having a big meeting on February 20th to talk about the roots of violent crime in our community, focusing on mental health services.
This in response to the tragedy in Newtown, I'm sure.
Yes, I've been working with Dr. Jan Kosofsky and Tanja Miles and their staff, discussing possibilities and wanting to bring the community together to inform the public of efforts that are already being taken to address violent crimes in the greater Baton Rouge area. And also, Jim, to come up with a plan of action from the community. So we've invited members from our congressional delegation to attend, and I do expect several of them to be in attendance. We've already had confirmation from Congressman Bill Cassidy, and it will take place on February 20th at the Capital Area Human Services District, which is on Government Street, 4615 Government Street.
Do you think there'll be any move at the Capitol on any kind of gun control legislation?
It would surprise me if there was not any legislation. I anticipate somebody will do something surrounding gun violence. But of course, Jim, I think we're seeing that at the root of a lot of the violence is certainly mental health challenges that people are having. And research has certainly shown that, especially when it comes to schools and public safety. I do think that individuals are definitely concerned about schools and public safety.
877-217-5757, wherever you are, for Senator Sharon Weston Broome, Democrat from Baton Rouge, District 15, Senate President Pro Tem, former Speaker Pro Tem of the Louisiana House, was the first female elected to that post. And, of course, some of us remember her days as a journalist of significance in this community. Jim on Highland. Good morning, Jim. You're on with Senator Broome.
I would like to ask Senator Broome why that Earl K. Long is the only hospital being closed in the whole system, leaving Baton Rouge without a LSU teaching hospital, when the Baton Rouge delegation seems to be scared of the fourth floor, and why we haven't addressed these shortages of closing deals to move the medical system over to the lake and other places, when poor women that are pregnant and not pregnant have to walk down the Highway 61 to go to Woman's Hospital on one of the most dangerous thoroughfares in the state, and why we are turning a blind eye to taking care of the people that we were elected to take care of.
You bring up a very good point, and certainly I don't think I fit in the category of people that you're addressing as elected officials. While I am a member of the delegation, from the very beginning of this whole private public partnership and merger, I have been very demonstrative in expressing my concerns about the process. And as this process has accelerated, I have certainly been very vocal, along with my colleague, Representative Regina Barrow, and others, in sharing our concerns about the what I am considering the unraveling of the healthcare safety net here in Baton Rouge. You have to remember, though, we are one or two out of 144 legislators. And while many, I would say you're preaching to the choir right now. So that message should have been sent and needs to continue to be sent to others who are not embracing the same tenacity as it relates to health care for the uninsured here in our state. So I share your concerns. I have been actively working. Many of our initiatives has been reported in the paper and through media, but there are a lot of things that we do to advocate for health care here in our city as it relates to the closing of Earl K. Long that you're not necessarily going to always hear or see.
A good idea to shut down Earl K. Long?
Well, let me just say this, Jim. I don't think it was a good idea to shut it down in the process in which we did. Now, granted, Earl K. Long is an antiquated facility. However, it was one of the top teaching hospitals where you get excellent care in our state. And so to that extent, I think the model in which we have embraced is not necessarily advancing health care and really addressing the needs of the citizens in our community. I had always advocated for a cost-effective new hospital. That money was even in the budget under the Blanco administration, and that was the direction that we were going in. And then under the Jindal administration, their vision was different. Mm-hmm. And so that money was shifted to a private-public partnership with Our Lady of the Lake Hospital. And I certainly was on the forefront, as well as others, in expressing our concerns about that shift without extending due diligence in the process.
297-5633 to talk with Senator Sharon Weston Broome, Democrat from Baton Rouge. Bruce in Walden. Hi, Bruce. You're on the air with Senator Broome.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Hello, Senator. My primary concern is with the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare to potentially 400,000 uninsured, mainly working poor people in Louisiana. I know you're in favor of the expansion. What I'm trying to find out is, what is the legislature going to do about it?
That's a good question in terms of what the legislature can do about the Medicaid expansion. I do believe that the Medicaid exchange, as I understand, will be initiated with or without the approval or initiative of DHH or administration. I do believe that at the end of the day, when we see our healthcare system and the services for the uninsured unraveling and diminishing, that hopefully the administration will take a different position as it relates to the Medicaid expansion. As you notice, a number of other governors in other states who initially were not for it have since made a shift. And I would certainly be delighted if our governor would also make that shift.
Two polls have been released in the last week showing Governor Jindal's popularity waning. One poll has him under 50%, and another survey has him below 40. Is this, if these numbers are accurate, are they related in any way to some of these controversial stands that he's taking?
I would imagine so, because people are extremely, extremely concerned, Jim, about health care and having a safety net. And these services cross all barriers, you know, gender, race, et cetera. So people in Louisiana, and of course, Jim, we have to remember that Louisiana is, you know, like second in poverty in the nation. And so with those kind of statistics, we need services for people.
297-5633 is your number outside Baton Rouge. It's 877-217-5757. We'll take a 90-second pause and return with Senator Sharon Weston Broome on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Still time to get in with Senator Sharon Weston Broome, Senate President Pro Tem of the upper chamber in the Louisiana legislature. And in less than 2 months, lawmakers will convene for what is expected to be a busy session with Governor Jindal aiming to change the tax structure in our state. Barry in Mid-City. Good morning, Barry. You're on with Senator Broome.
Yes, thank you, Jim. A great show again. And Senator Broome, I'm wondering, following up on the health exchange, isn't there a sense among the legislative body, or especially perhaps in the Senate, that we just must do this for the sake of people who are in poverty in order to get them better health care?
Yes, most definitely. I would say that based on my communication with a number of my colleagues, that this is an issue that concerns a great number of us across party lines, recognizing the health care deficit that will exist in our state if we do not forge ahead and make sure that we do embrace the Medicaid exchange and expansion. And as I said before, if we don't do the exchange, the federal government will do it for us.
297-5633 is your number. As you know, there is opposition in these parts to President Obama. He received 41% of the votes in November in Louisiana while getting over 51% nationally. What do you make about the aversion to accepting him as the President of the United States in some parts right here in your own backyard?
Well, Jim, I believe that, you know, America is the best place in the world that we can live. And what I like about living in America, one of the things, is that we can have a myriad of opinions and freedom of expression as it relates especially to our political ideology. So I don't have a problem with having Republicans, Democrats, independents, people with diverse ideas. But I do believe that every person who holds the office of presidency of the president should have the respect that comes with that office. And so while we may disagree philosophically or politically on some of his issues, where a lot of people here in Louisiana may disagree, I still believe that we owe the respect and we should have civil engagement around the disagreements. And so to that extent, Louisiana is indeed a state that did not carry President Obama, but he is the president. We should respect the fact that he is the president. That doesn't keep us from having different views. And I think we should move forward and come together where we can. Let me share one thing, Jim, that comes to my mind. And that is the fact that it has been stated that it took some people 6 hours to vote in the last election. A 102-year-old woman stood 6 hours to vote. In South Africa, it just took them 4 hours for their first election. So I believe that that is an area where Democrats, Republicans, independent, Tea Party people can all come together, because certainly we believe that America is better than that, that we should not, people should not have to wait in line for 6 hours to exercise their right to vote. And so that's an issue where I think we all can come together on, especially if our motives are pure about the process.
It will be curious to see what happens next year when Senator Landrieu runs for re-election, as she, it looks like she will. Will the president be invited to Louisiana to campaign for her? He obviously could raise a good deal of money for her, but would he be a radioactive presence on the campaign trail, or somebody who could actually help her win re-election? What do you think about next year and the president being in Louisiana?
I think that's going to be up to the Landrieu camp and knowing the lay of the land here in Louisiana. So I think they're going to make that call. Her team will certainly make that call. And I think there are some people who certainly would embrace a push from the president for Senator Landrieu. And then there are others who might not sit too well with them. So it's all it depends on her reelection strategy.
And she got some grief for inviting the vice president to the state for a fundraiser.
So that may be a barometer of where things are headed if she invites the president.
Well, you were on the Metro Council, and of course you represent a good portion of Baton Rouge in the Senate. We had a listener, Megan, who asked about your thoughts regarding the sacking of Chief Dwayne White. What do you think of that, if anything?
Well, I was on the Metro Council, and let me say this very briefly. I respect our mayor, Kip Holden. And the mayor's responsibility, that position is under the mayor, that department is under the mayor's jurisdiction according to the plan of government. So the mayor is the leader, the buck stops with him. However, I will say that I do think that Chief White was certainly building a positive community relationship with individuals and was gaining momentum in terms of his leadership as the police chief. I don't know all the dynamics that were involved, but I hope that we can come to a resolution that will not stagnate Baton Rouge as it relates to public safety. So,
well, it's gotten messy. His departure is not one that is pleasant.
It has gotten messy. That's unfortunate, and I certainly hope that the mayor, the council, others involved in the community will come. At some point, this can have a happy ending of sorts.
Well, lastly, on the crime issue in this community, and as stated, you represent a large portion of it. Where do we stand as far as improving the conditions that have been prevailing over the last several years?
Well, we have a grave room for improvement, and that's why I think that the mental health component of the equation is so important. And during our meeting on the 20th, when we discussed the roots of violent crime in our community, we will talk about that. We will talk about the prevention of gun violence. We'll have panelists from all segments of the community, including the judiciary and law enforcement. And at the end of that meeting, Jim, I hope to come up with a local advisory committee to recommend needed changes in public safety, mental health services, and the prevention of gun violence.
Very good. On the meeting on the 20th will be where?
It will be at the Capital Area Human Services District at 4615 Government Street.
And for those who'd like more information about this meeting and the others that you plan, best way to contact your office is?
They can call my office at 359-9352. That's my district office, 359-9352. And we'll see the people in the Baker area on Monday, February 18th from 5:30 to 7:30 at the Baker Branch Library.
Thank you. Good to visit with you. Senate President Pro Tem Sharon Weston Broom, and we look forward to talking with her during the legislative session as well. We're joined now by Leo Lowndes. She is one of the most sought-after speakers on communication techniques, the author of several international bestsellers. Her latest is How to Create Chemistry with Anyone. Good morning to you, Leo Lowndes.
Good morning to you, Jim.
Now, you are a fascinating person, and you say there are two kinds of people in this life, those who walk into a room and say, well, here I am, and those who walk in and say, ah, there you are. Which is better?
Oh, the ah, there you are person. People are so concerned about how they're coming across, what they're saying, what they're doing, and people really are not watching. They're worried about what they're saying, what they're doing, and how they're coming across.
Well, in your book, How to Create Chemistry with Anyone, 75 Ways to Spark It Fast and Make It Last, this is appropriate for Valentine's Day. Yeah, love is one of our most fundamental human needs, but you say the chemistry of love and attraction is fickle. Why so?
It is so much. We feel that immediate blam for someone, that spark of chemistry, and that comes from actually places that we don't have any control over. However, there are ways that we can simulate that blast of chemistry when you first meet someone. It comes from basically your love map. When it's called your love map, between the ages of 1 and 5 years old, we form an opinion of the type of person that we maybe 20 years later could fall in love with. And it's because if we were brought up, if we had a warm, loving atmosphere, that many years later we could see someone who reminds us, who looks like they could be from the same gene pool, and that could cause that immediate blam. If you had an abusive childhood, likewise, someone who looked like you were when you were growing up, looked like your family, looked like the people around you, it could be a very strong blam, but it could be like the bad boy syndrome for the wrong person.
Well, we tend to live what we know, and quite often if people are abused as children, they end up getting with abusive spouses. Why do we do
Absolutely.
This? Kind of, why do we do that?
It is so tragic because it's a familiar dynamic. In a funny kind of way, we feel comfortable around that dynamic because that's what we had when we were a child. But feeling that spark is not only just that. Mother Nature has a lot to do with it. Mother Nature's whole job is to, of course, populate the earth and have the healthiest plants, animals, and human beings that she can. So she has it arranged so that you feel also a spark of chemistry with someone who has a complementary immune system so that you could produce the best child, the healthiest child possible. And that's also part of the spark. So when you feel the spark, it's dopamine, actually, the chemical rushing into your brain, into what's called the pleasure center of your brain. And that's why you feel that boom when you spot someone that you feel is right for you.
The book is How to Create Chemistry with Anyone from Leo Lowndes. You mentioned dopamine. That's part of a chapter, The Six Sexy Chemicals of Love. Some of the others we know well, testosterone and estrogen. They're important to love, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. They're important to early love. Now, there are two kinds of love, let's call it. There is that early, crazy, madly in love, can't live without you, have to jump your bones type of love. And the Archive of Sexual Behavior actually defines that early, intense romantic love as a psychopathological condition. And unfortunately, this dopamine that we feel when we first fall in love, it's not real love, but first fall in love, only has a shelf life of about 1.5 to 2 years. And then, by nature's decree, it falls off. And it's so tragic, Jim. So many people feel that they're falling out of love when that happens. Not at all. It could be that the real oxytocin-based love is setting in because oxytocin actually mitigates against testosterone. And there are chemicals in childbirth also that can mitigate against the sexual desire. So, you know, just stay in there, and there are also techniques, just like I have techniques to create that first blam of dopamine, there are techniques to actually create that long-lasting oxytocin-based, more peaceful, long-lasting love.
The guest, Leo Lowndes, knows her topic well in one of your chapters, All Men Are Animals. Our city is mentioned. You say, huntresses, have you or a friend ever complained guys are only interested in sex? If not, you've probably thought it. My girlfriend Brandy from Baton Rouge certainly does. Brandy is a beautiful woman, a serial dater, and a constant complainer about men. She comes to New York every year to run the marathon. Here is our annual ritual. The night before the big event, we go to the same restaurant for the same pasta with olive sauce, and I listen to some of her gripes about the men in her life. What are some of her gripes?
That men are only thinking of sex. And that, one of her big complaints was that men don't cuddle after sex, and she interprets that as not caring for her. And it's almost a physical impossibility for a man to stay awake after sex. The fact that he doesn't cuddle you doesn't mean that he doesn't love you. He suffers a condition called postcoital narcolepsy, and that is because when he ejaculates, a big shot of oxytocin comes out mixed with the dopamine, and it cause it's almost like an Ambien, and it puts a man to sleep. We women don't suffer that. So that's one of the things that she complains about, and also that all men think about is sex. Well, Mother Nature programmed a man that way. That's what starts most long, loving relationships, is that sexual chemistry for a particular woman.
You note that women and their choices for mates sometimes change their opinions and their actions based on whether or not they're taking birth control pills.
Yes, isn't that amazing? We like the birth control pill simulates pregnancy, and Mother Nature has it arranged so that when we are pregnant, we are not as attracted to the right person who would be for us to bear a child with, because we've already got one in our tummies. So don't make a choice at that particular time, because you might be attracted to someone through smell that was just not right for you, and it's because you're on the pill.
So if you're not on the pill, how does the assessment of a mate change?
Well, there are many, many things that come into it. But a woman will not like the taste of a man's saliva or his smell if he is not the right person to bear a child with, according to Mother Nature, the healthiest child. So it is important to, that's why they say the first kiss is so important. You have to pretty much like the smell and the taste of your man, and vice versa, in order to have a good, healthy child eventually. Mother Nature is just totally obsessed with, of course, having children, where we are obsessed with having happiness. And very often they have different signs and different methods for creating them.
So if I follow your reasoning, Aleel, if you're a woman, you should not choose your mate for life if you're taking birth control pills.
Not at that particular time.
Well, some women take birth control pills for years and years and years. So
exactly.
So they would choose.
Well, they can't trust their instincts, their natural instincts, and they can certainly trust their instincts about the man, about the person, but just don't make the mistake of deciding to get married while you're still on the pill, if you've been on the pill for as long as you've known this gentleman, because it may be that eventual offspring would not have the healthiest immune systems.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is appropriate for Valentine's Day, How to Create Chemistry with Anyone, from Leo Lowndes. You write, if the first kiss stinks, forget about it.
Right, absolutely. And also, the techniques to create chemistry with someone are very important. Funny little things you can do. A woman can look at a man's eyes, but then look immediately down at his body, his chest, not below his belt, and then give him a big approving smile. And that shoots testosterone up through the roof. It also creates the dopamine in his brain, because our pleasure center, caudate nucleus, lives a lot in the future. So he's thinking immediately of sex, and the testosterone dopamine cocktail makes him feel that big spark.
We'll return with Leo Lowndes, the author of How to Talk to Anyone and How to Make Anyone Fall in Love with You. Her latest is How to Create Chemistry with Anyone. Back after this 90-second timeout on 89.3 WRKF. Listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. A bit more time with Leo Lowndes. Her book is How to Create Chemistry with Anyone. And getting back to what you said at the onset of our conversation, Leo, you say that our attraction to certain kinds of people, our companions in life, that this is quite often based on something that is embedded in us by the age of five.
Yes, our love map, scientists call it. It's because most of us, hopefully most of us, do feel very protected and very loved unconditionally. Like no matter what we said or what we did, we would still be loved. And that is a condition that we seek again and again for the rest of our lives.
Okay.
And that's why if we see someone who seems like that might have elements of that person, That's good. It's one of the reasons that a man should not give a woman a look at her body like that, but should give her a protective smile. It makes her feel warm and like when she was a child, and that's what men and women want to respond to, unconditional love.
And you comment that perhaps the most important body part for a man or a woman in a relationship, especially at its beginning, is our eyes.
Yes.
Why?
Yeah. The brain, of course, is the most important, but the eyes, when you're looking at your potential partner or partner, if there's an interruption in the background, don't look away too quickly. Like sticky eyes, just pull your eyes away slowly, like you hated to look away from this particular person.
Well, why do we feel instant attraction to one person and not another? And how can we ensure that the connection lasts? That's the second part of this. We know instantaneously, usually, whether or not we are attracted, but how do we keep that going for years and years?
Oh, good question. This is the thing that I so wish people understood. There is a chemical called oxytocin. Animals, when they've had oxytocin in their system, animals remain faithful to their partners forever. When the oxytocin is taken out, they just become like so many other, I know, 97% of the other animals in the world who will copulate with, you know, a lot of other animals. But to create oxytocin, there are little tricks, ways to do it. One of them is the power of human touch, non-sexual touch. Dating couples and married couples should try to hold hands as much as they can, sleep spooning each other, have his hand on your shoulder while you're sleeping, let your knee rest against his leg. The power of human touch absolutely brings on the oxytocin. That's just one of the quick ways that you can do it.
Well, we thank you for joining us today. How to create chemistry with anyone and 75 ways to spark it fast and make it last for Leo Lounce. Thank you, Leo.
Great pleasure being on your show. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. And we're joined now as we continue our Valentine's theme with Marilyn Yalom. Her book is How the French Invented Love, 900 Years of Passion and Romance. Good morning, Marilyn.
Good morning.
Nice to talk with Marilyn, who is a former professor of French and has taught for many years at Stanford University and is written many books, widely acclaimed, and the latest, How the French Invented Love. Why do the French have a monopoly on love?
I wouldn't say they have a monopoly on it, but they were the first to invent the concept of what we call romantic love, that is, a relationship in which the man serves the woman rather than vice versa. And this came from the troubadour poetry of the 12th century in southern France, and spread into the courts of France and then throughout Europe. It's a concept of love. It was for then, at that time, something distinctly new that put woman at the center of the love relationship, not only as the object of the man's desire, but also as a subject of her own desire.
Now, I follow what you're saying, but there are some who believe that the French are antiquated in some ways. After the controversy over Dominic Strauss-Kahn a couple years ago.
Certainly what the French call gallantry can veer into debauchery, and that was the case of Dominique Strauss-Kahn. But I do have to say that his is an exception, and even the French rose up to protest against his excess. After all, he lost his position at the International Monetary Fund. He lost his potential for being the president of France, and he lost his wife. So he's pretty heavily censured.
Of course, it started with a rebuke in the United States, of all places. How do we compare in the U.S. with the French in the way we celebrate love of each other?
Well, I think that the French think of love as a good in and of itself. It has its own justification. And a person who doesn't feel desire is seen as somehow defective, like missing the sense of smell or of taste. The idea of love is a part of the French sense of identity, just as wine and good food are. And I don't think that love is as central to our national sense of identity. I think we like to consider ourselves as good citizens in a democratic country, and those are values that we espouse. But to say that America is the country of love would be pushing it. And I think another very interesting distinction is that women in this country very often prize motherhood over their relations in their relationship with the husband, whereas the French very clearly are trying to maintain romance in their marriage at the same time that they are mothers and fathers.
Marilyn Yalom's book is How the French Invented Love. You write that France has always been a country where sex has not only been tolerated, but generally prized as part of the national character.
I think that's true. The French think of love as embedded in the flesh, and that came home to me very clearly in a poll that was taken of middle-aged French men and women and middle-aged Americans. The statement was, can love exist without a radiant sex life? 83% of the Americans agreed with that statement, but only 39% of the French agreed. So there's a 49% difference in the French belief that sex is an intrinsic part of love.
And in the U.S., we tamp it down, our emotions, some would say, and our instincts, our urges, by a puritanical streak. Would that be fair to say?
I think that's fair, though the Puritans get a pretty bad rap. They certainly encouraged love and sex in marriage. But what has evolved since the 17th century tends to think of the flesh as a temptation rather than as a pleasure. The French are very big on the word pleasure, le plaisir, which often has a sexual connotation. And they say that with a twinkle in their eye rather than with a note of condemnation. So I do think there is a more accepting view of sexual or erotic love in France than we have, generally speaking, in this country.
And you add that the French also recognize the emotional powers of love.
Oh, absolutely. If you go and see the film, which is recommended, which has been nominated as the best foreign film of the year, Amour, you will see a love relationship that endures into the 80s. The couple are an octogenarian, and after the wife's stroke, the husband takes care of her in a way that any one of us would wish to be cared for. It's a very French film in that respect. So that love can transcend the flesh, but it begins there in France.
297-5633 for Marilyn Yalom. Her book is How the French Invented Love. And a question from Molly. She asks if the French and their ideas about love and their concept, does that mean that in France, generally people have more sexual partners over the course of their lives than they do in the United States?
Well, I don't have the statistics for that, but what I can say is that the custom of having a lover outside of marriage, both for the man and for the woman, is age old in France, and so that certainly does have a long history. However, today, young people have a lot of sex before and after marriage. Well, mostly before marriage, that would be the hope. And one has a totally different experience from my generation of the 1950s. We used to say, first come love, then comes marriage. Then comes Marilyn with the baby carriage.
Uh-huh.
Today, it's first there's sex, then there's a lot of sex, and then if you're lucky, you fall in love with someone, which doesn't necessarily mean that you marry that person. Often there's people cohabit. In France today, there is something called le pax, which is a pact of solidarity. It's kind of a halfway step between cohabitation and marriage. It gives you many of the rights of marriage, but not all of them. And it was intended for same-sex couples, but now heterosexual couples are using it even more than same-sex couples.
One of your chapters focuses on lesbian love.
Yes, indeed, because as early as 1900, there was a lesbian community in France, mainly in Paris. Women were cutting their hair short and wearing masculine-looking jackets and getting together in bars. And the writer Colette, known more for her heterosexual life and novels, she was a part of that scene and wrote about it.
And this was something that was prominent in France, say, between the turn of the century, turn of the 19th century, and World War II.
Yes, it was certainly more out in the open in France than it was in this country, though not socially accepted across the board. Today, there is a pretty open gay and lesbian communities in France. In fact, the mayor of Paris is openly gay.
Another chapter is entitled, curiously, Republican Love. What do you mean by this?
Well, when the French Republic was inaugurated in 1789, a new concept of love came into being. It opposed the decadence, as it was seen, of the monarchy and a serial love during that time, with the idea of monogamous love, and that a husband and wife should be good citizens, and that they should raise their children to be good citizens. One of the criteria for a wife was that she should nurse her babies, as opposed to sending the babies to wet nurses. So there was a whole ideology of love and marriage that came into being with the French Revolution.
Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on the air with Marilyn Yalom. Her book is How the French Invented Love.
Yes. Do you think that the acceptance of President Mitterrand's mistress is a prime example of the difference between American and French approach to sexuality?
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. When Mitterrand was asked, do you have a mistress? Do you have a child out of marriage? He said, it's none of your business. I do, and it's none of your business. And the French couldn't quite understand the hullabaloo around Clinton and Monica Lewinsky. In fact, a right-wing woman representative in Parliament stood up and said, it just proves that the man loves women. So a very different attitude towards extramarital affairs. Now, of course, that's not across the board. Very often having an affair can really mess up a marriage, and the French are aware of that in the same way that we are.
Well, in the United States, we're inconsistent in our views about fidelity and adultery. Clint Eastwood was a keynote speaker at the Republican Convention where the conventional 1950s lifestyle was embraced with zeal, and here's a man who's had seven children with five different women.
Indeed, and so no one asked that question when he was put onto television and didn't live up to the promise. It certainly is true, and when General Petraeus strayed from the marital bed and was forced to resign, David Brooks on National Public Radio made the statement that he takes a French view of such situations and that Petraeus shouldn't have been forced to resign. So, yes, we do have very mixed feelings on the subject today.
Finally, we're short on time, but Elizabeth writes and asks, a speaker, meaning Marilyn, said women focus on spouse and not motherhood as opposed to U.S. How does this affect kids?
Well, I think that children in France grow up knowing that their parents are a couple, and they see that model, and it's a model that they themselves want to espouse. I mean, this doesn't mean that divorce is unknown in France. Divorce exists in France, and it can be as troublesome for children as it is in this country.
Thank you so much, Marilyn Yalom. Her book, How the French Invented Love. Happy Valentine's Day to you, and we'll be back tomorrow. Until then.
All right. Thank you.
Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.